The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, and we made it to Friday. There are fewer things that I get more pleasure out of these days than when Friday rolls around, because I know the weekend is here. I used to dread the weekend. That's another story for another day. Anyway, here we are, and there's a lot going on. And I got to tell you, sometimes we just are, the timing is fortuitous. So, you know, over the past month or so, we've been talking quite a bit on this program about antitrust issues, about monopoly. But it's not only us. I mean, I don't want to take credit for it. Tom Hartman wrote a book about monopolies, right? His Hidden History series. The last one was about monopolies. And he comes on the show every time he publishes a new one. In fact, his next one is on healthcare. I just got the advanced copy of the book. He'll be on with us, I believe, in September. But we're talking monopoly. Then David Dayan's second book was on monopolies, right? And then about a month ago, I had Cory Doctorow on the show, who is a journalist and an author and just sort of a master of all trades. But one of his main issues is antitrust and monopolies. And so in the discussion with him, when I was talking about him to Howie Klein, Howie said, well, you should have Matt Stoller on the show because Matt Stoller, this is his issue. And sure enough, Matt Stoller came on what day was it? Tuesday, I believe, or Wednesday. It was Wednesday of this week. And as it turns out, the guest that Howie and I had on yesterday, Lucas Kuntz, who's running for Senate from Missouri to replace Roy Blunt, works with Matt Stoller at the same organization, and I'm forgetting the name of it. I'm sorry, but they deal with antitrust issues, right? So, how surprised was I when I get up this morning and I'm doing my what's news thing, and I see, and I don't know if I just missed it or. You know, I do everything myself here. I don't have a producer feeding me stories. I don't have, I have some of you emailing me and things. But I wasn't aware that today Joe Biden was going to sign this executive order to, quote, encourage greater consumer protections and promote competition in a long overdue effort to reduce the power of monopolies. Oh, I should have my sting up here somewhere because that deserves a something like that, right? So monopolies. So, and to further keep this phenomenon going, Cory Doctorow is coming back on Monday. Because when he was on with me last month, I immediately booked him again because we ran out of time so quickly. There was so much left to talk about. So he's going to be with us for the whole hour on Monday. And, well, this is a perfect time to talk about what Joe Biden did. So this order, this executive order, reportedly impacts numerous industries, including agriculture, airlines, health, broadband, and banking. It also includes a provision urging the FCC to reinstate the net neutrality rules. Interesting, huh? So he made the big speech. He did a speech. It was, I don't know, around 2 or 3 o'clock this afternoon or something. And here's the gist of it. The executive order includes 72 initiatives, 72, by more than a dozen federal agencies to tackle some of the most pressing competition problems across the economy. And I love this one. Biden is also encouraging the Federal Trade Commission to, quote, vigorously enforce antitrust laws and challenge prior bad mergers when appropriate. It seems like the stars are aligning or something. So I didn't pull video. It's been a crazy day, but I do have some audio. Joe Biden, the speech wasn't overly long. He's a slow talker. Anyway, I did pull a little bit, so I want you to hear this because I think it's really, really important stuff. And again, we'll get deeper into it on Monday. But here's an excerpt of Joe Biden talking about what he's going to do, or what this executive order is intended to do. But he starts this section. I'm cutting out the whole first part of the speech, but he starts this part of it where I pick it up by making some historical connections, saying we've been here before, we've done it before, we can do it again. Maybe. Come on. Wrong button. Okay, try this one.
We know we've got a problem, a major problem.
Yes.
We also have an incredible opportunity. We can bring back more competition to more of the country.
Okay.
Helping entrepreneurs and small businesses get in the game.
Okay.
Helping workers get a better deal. Helping families save money every month.
Good.
Good news is we've done it before. In the early 1900s, President Teddy Roosevelt saw an economy dominated by giants like Standard Oil and J.P. Morgan's railroads.
Oh, I got to tell you.
He took them on, and he won.
The audio is bad.
Fighting chance. Decades later, during the Great Depression, his cousin Franklin Roosevelt saw a wave of corporate mergers that wiped out scores of small businesses, crushing competition and innovation. So he ramped up antitrust enforcement.
Yes, he did.
Eightfold in just 2 years.
Right. FDR.
Saving families billions in today's dollars and helping set the course for sustained economic growth after World War II. He also called for an economic bill of rights, including, quote, the right of every businessman, large and small, to trade in an atmosphere of freedom from unfair competition and domination by monopolies. End of quote.
Can we just stop down for a second and discuss how nice it is to have a president again who knows history, who can quote the policies of Teddy Roosevelt and FDR and say, I want to expand on what they started. And he's going to go into the mistake we made 40 years ago that continues. And I need to warn you, sorry about the audio. I took it off of C-SPAN and they had audio issues, go figure. But you can hear it. It's only a couple more minutes that I want you to hear. So here we go.
End of quote. Between them, the two Roosevelts established an American tradition.
Yeah, okay.
An antitrust tradition.
Antitrust tradition.
It's how we ensure that our economy isn't about people working for capitalism. It's about capitalism working for people.
Capitalism working for
people. But over time, we've lost the fundamental American idea that true capitalism depends on fair and open competition. 40 years ago,
we chose
the wrong path.
Yes, we did.
In my view. Following the misguided philosophy of people like Robert Bork and pull back on enforcing laws to promote competition. We are now 40 years into the experiment of letting giant corporations accumulate more and more power.
Yeah.
What have we gotten from it?
Nothing.
Less growth, weakened investment, fewer small businesses. Too many Americans who feel left behind. Too many people who are poorer than their parents.
Yeah.
I believe the experiment failed.
Okay.
We have to get back to an economy that grows from the bottom up and the middle out.
Wow.
The executive order I'm soon going to be signing commits the federal government to full and aggressive enforcement of antitrust laws.
About time.
No more tolerance for abusive actions by monopolies. No more bad mergers that lead to mass layoffs.
Yeah, baby.
Higher prices.
Yeah.
Fewer options for workers.
Okay.
And consumers alike.
I'm liking this.
My executive order includes 72 specific actions.
72.
I expect the federal agencies, and they know this, to help restore competition.
Yeah.
So that we have lower prices, higher wages, more money, more options, and more convenience for the American people. Today, I want to focus on three specific actions.
Okay.
First, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration.
Yeah.
We're going to work with states and tribes to safely import prescription drugs from Canada.
Yes!
That's just one of many actions in the executive order that will lower prescription drug prices.
Okay.
Second, the FDA is going to issue rules so that hearing aids can be sold over the counter.
Okay, that's good.
That's something the last administration was supposed to have done, but didn't do. We're going to get it done.
Okay.
After these rules go into effect, a pair of hearing aids can cost hundreds of dollars, not thousands. And you'll be able to pick them up at your local drugstore.
That makes sense.
Third, we're going to improve competition for workers.
Yes.
I've talked a lot about non-compete agreements, contracts that say you can't take another job in your field, even if you get a better deal. I made a speech, I was just reminiscing with my staff, back in 2018 at the Brookings Institution, where I talked about the non-compete clauses that were just, I found to be absolutely
horrible. They're ridiculous.
But how prevalent they were throughout industries.
At least one in three businesses require their workers to sign a non-compete agreement.
That's ridiculous.
These aren't just high-paid executives or scientists whole secret formulas for Coca-Cola so Pepsi can't get their hands on it. The recent study found one in five workers without a college education is subject to non-compete agreement.
Which is insane. Okay, that's enough. And sorry about, again, about the noise that was C-SPAN or it was the White House equipment, whatever. The noise wasn't my fault. Just, you know, letting you know. Anyway, but forget about the noise. Listen to what he said. This is what we've been talking about here for the past month. And yes, Cory Doctorow will be here Monday so we can get more into what this executive order does, these 72 initiatives, 72. And the thing about non-compete clauses, you know, in radio, they happen all the time. I mean, if you're a disc jockey on one station and you leave, most contracts have at the very minimum, a 6-month non-compete, which sucks. So you can't cross the street, but at least I understand in that respect. I mean, it's direct competition. But he goes on talking about there are companies that lay asphalt and the workers who lay asphalt have to sign a non-compete. So if they leave and a company across the street wants to hire them and give them more money, they can't. Oh, Carol Libskind, thank you so much. Carol is chatting in the YouTube chat room, and she said, even though I think you're a little harsh on people on our side, I support you. And yes, you do. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm harsh because I love. I criticize because I want them to do better. And I'm disappointed a lot in our side because they don't do enough. And But I'm trying to hold back. But thank you. I appreciate the support. So this is really great news. And I may bitch and moan about Joe Biden from time to time, you know, because he's there.
Come on, man.
But I do it because I care. And look, if I complain or criticize Joe, it has nothing to do with the former guy. As I've said a million times, my dog Jackson would have made a better replacement for the orange idiot than, you know, or would have made a better replacement for the orange idiot than having him in office again. Joe Biden's doing even better than that. Certainly better than I expected. And, all right. And David's calling. All right. Hi, David. Hello.
I am sorry. But I will not stand by and allow you to knock our former president the way you just did. Not only did he know that Frederick Douglass was doing great things, but he also knew that Andrew Jackson himself, by himself, could have prevented the Civil War.
Oh, right.
He was a great historian.
Of course.
He had total grasp of the salient events of history. He even knew who Susan B. Anthony was when he asked people at a Women's History Month march.
What have you been smoking, and why don't I have any of that? Can you save me some at least?
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Love you, bye.
That was my husband, in case you were wondering. So that happened. That just happened today, like a mere couple of hours ago. So it's all still sinking in. I guess we have the weekend to digest what went on. But it's good. And yes, I am praising Joe Biden for this executive order he signed today. Not only praising him, I am applauding him. Joe Biden, you go. You go. That was awesome. And again, we will pick up on that subject on Monday when I've had the chance to digest more of it over the weekend. But this can only be good. This can only be good. Enforcing our antitrust laws, go figure. I mean, one of the first things I asked Matt Stoller on Wednesday was, is the Sherman Antitrust Act still in effect? Yeah, it's still on the books. We just don't enforce it. Well, maybe that will change now. And so, yeah, this is good. This is a good way to start the weekend. Some other things have happened too. I have my little tidbits area here because oftentimes, you know, I get hung up on the big things and then we have guests and some of the little stories, little curiosities I don't get to deal with. And we do have a guest coming up today. It's David Daley, who's been on the program before. You know him. He's the guy who wrote the book Rat Fucked, Why Your Vote Doesn't Count, all about gerrymandering. And he's got a new piece, well, published last week in The Guardian. And I have it here, but I don't have the headline on it. The headline reads, Republicans can win the next elections through gerrymandering alone. So he's going to put up a bit of a cautionary tale for us that we all need to heed and consider. I'm not saying to worry about it because worrying doesn't do us any good, but you need to think about it as we go about our business over these next couple of years leading up to the midterm elections. All right, so we'll talk to David Daley in just a few minutes. But first, I got to go here. So two things. There are two. One thing I never got to yesterday, and it's just a kind of a quick aside, but it merits at least a mention. And that is Trump, you know, the orange guy, last week or last weekend, whenever it was, and he did that false, you know, I can't even say these words without choking on them. So he announced the other day that he is filing a class action lawsuit. There's no class if it's only one person, and there's certainly no class if it's Donald Trump, but you get the idea. He said it's a class action lawsuit. It's not a class with one person, but anyway, he made his announcement in front of the Bedminster Golf Club, where he's living. He's wintering because it's too hot for him down in Florida at Mar-a-Lago. So, and he made up, they designed the front of this club, this private club, to look like the Rose Garden. He had a podium with a fake presidential seal and in front of his, in the fake Rose Garden, and announcing his fake class action lawsuit, where he's suing, you know, social media for not letting him spread lies. But the one thing that I want to tell you about was he actually told the truth about something. And this is such a rarity that when he does tell the truth, I think we should, you know, amplify it. So what did he tell the truth about? His lies. Here's what he said.
If you say it long enough, hard enough, often enough, people will start to believe it. That's what happened with Russia. That's what happened with Ukraine. That's what happened with
you.
Well, the worst is when they don't say it, like the laptop from hell.
Oh, shut up. Okay, so what did he say? You say it long
if
enough.
If you say it long enough, long enough, hard enough, often enough.
Long enough, hard enough, often enough, they'll believe you. And that's how he lives his life. You tell a lie enough times, and the idiots out there who follow you like lemmings will believe you. That's how he got to where he is. But even that's not an original thought for him, because the last really mental midget who occupied the White House was W. And remember when W said it? He said it in slightly different words, but he said it nonetheless.
If you've retired, you don't have anything to worry about. It's the third time I've said that. I'll probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.
To catapult the propaganda. You got to say things over and over again for the truth to sink in, or the lies. In other words, you got to catapult the propaganda. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. And then that brings us to Ronnie Jackson. Do you remember Ronnie Jackson? He was the White House doctor. Oh, shoot. I meant to pull up the report. You know, every year we're supposed to get the White House doctor's report on the president's physical. Well, Donald Trump really didn't have, I don't think he ever sat for a real physical. And when Ronnie Jackson did release the findings once, remember he said, oh, he weighs 239 pounds.
Bullshit.
That he's in such great health. He's got such great genes. And in fact, if he didn't, I forget how he put it, if he didn't do something, he could live to be 200.
Bullshit.
You know, it's all nonsense. And we knew right then that this guy was a bit, you know, wackadoodle. And now, so Ronnie Jackson went full on Trumper. He actually, I believe, was let go from his post as White House doctor because a lot of stuff came out. In fact, he was called the Candyman because on long flights overseas, Ronnie Jackson would allegedly go up and down the aisles of Air Force One offering people, you know, one pill will let you sleep and one pill will wake you up. So he's given out the Ambiens and on the other side, the Provigil. And worse, I mean, we heard a lot of horrific things about him. So what does Ronnie Jackson do when he leaves the White House? He runs for the House of Representatives from Texas. And what does Texas do? They elect him. Yeah. So Ronnie Jackson was at some thing. It was last month. I don't know what the event was, but he's up there on stage doing his, you know, gaslighting. And he had the occasion to say this. Oh, actually, this wasn't last. No, that was, something else was last month. We're going to get to that when I bring on Dave Daly. Sorry, I got my Ronnie Jackson clips confused. This one, I think, was just yesterday. Or the day, it might have been yesterday, it might have been today. You know, CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee gathering, their convention, is kicking off in Texas today. And I have a feeling that's where Ronnie Jackson was when he said this. I'm in awe of the brilliance emanating from the mind of this medical doctor.
This is just another government overreach that sits right into the narrative that the Democrats do everything else with, the socialist, Marxist, communist way that they want to control your lives. And I'm absolutely opposed to that.
Socialist, communist, Marxist. According to brain surgeon, oh, maybe he's not a brain surgeon, but he is a medical doctor, Ronnie Jackson. Socialism, communism, and Marxism are all interchangeable. And we Democrats are guilty of all three. Seriously? It's mind-blowing. It really is mind-blowing. All right, I'm going to play for you the other thing because I brought it up. This was last month at some gathering and where Ronnie Jackson said the quiet part out loud. You ready? I'm just going to play you the quickie here. So it goes by very quickly. The quiet part out loud.
We have everything working in our favor right now. We have redistricting coming up, and the Republicans control most of that process in most of the states around the country. That alone should get us the majority back.
He just said it. All right. He said, we have redistricting coming up. We control all of it, and that alone should get us the White House back. So this is who this guy is. Obviously, it's who he's been all along. Here's my question. How did Obama not know? This guy was his doctor in the White House, I want to say, for 8 years. I wonder. Let me look up and see how long. How long was Ronnie Jackson White House physician? Look, I would have spotted him in 5 minutes. The entire time. Oh my God. Here. Jackson joined the White House medical unit in the mid-2000s under W and served as physician to the president from 2013 to 2018 under Obama and Trump. So it's not as bad as I thought. But still, more than a couple of years. He was in the White House medical unit the entire time, and he was the physician to the president from 2013 until January of 2017, when Barack Obama got on Air Force Two or Marine One, sorry, that's the helicopter, Marine One, and left the White House, right? So how did he not know? I mean, you would think he'd have a conversation with his doctor, right? I thought Obama was smarter than that, but I guess maybe I gave him too much credit. I'm sorry. I'm being too hard on our side. But sometimes it's warranted. How did he not know? How is that guy, this guy, the physician to our president?
This is just another government overreach. This fits right into the narrative that the Democrats do everything else with, the socialist, Marxist, communist way that they want to control your lives. And I'm absolutely opposed to that.
Oh, my God. By the way, so Ronny Jackson's in Texas, and he is a member of Congress. And yes, CPAC kicks off today. I won't be watching any of it. It's what you would expect. I'm sure we'll get some lovely clips from CPAC. And if you're really a masochist, you can turn on C-SPAN because I'm sure they'll be carrying much of CPAC throughout the weekend. If you want some comic relief, just, you know, Google them, pull up the agenda, because it's scary. And I guess if you're twisted enough, or maybe you drank enough, you can get some humor out of the different panels they have going on. And yes, Ronny Jackson is speaking. So go figure. It is opposite world. You know how I feel about opposite world. All right. So anyway, I mentioned the whole thing about the redistricting and what he said about, you know, Republicans control it all. And I'm going to play it for you again because I see our guest is here. So here's the longer clip, just so you know. He's got some facts backing up his contention here.
The good news is we are going to get the House back. Ugh. We are going to get the House back. That is God. A done deal.
Oh, God.
We've got some outstanding leadership in the House right now. You guys just heard from Whip Steve Scalise, fantastic leader.
Oh, yeah.
We got Kevin McCarthy, who's our leader in the House right now. They did a great job this last round.
They did
really
great job doing nothing.
It was projected that we would lose 15 seats in this last election. That's what the polls said, right? We didn't. We gained 15 seats instead of losing 15 seats,
right? What the hell? Yeah, how that happened.
The Democrats went from a 41-seat majority to a 9-seat majority overnight. We almost got the House back. We are four votes right now from controlling what happens on the floor. Right? We have everything working in our favor right now. We have redistricting coming up, and the Republicans control most of that process in most of the states around the country. That alone should get us the majority back. We have history on our side.
That's the quiet part out loud.
That the party that's not in the White House in a midterm election is going to pick up 30 to 40 seats. That's plenty to get us a majority back, right? And then the last thing we have going for us is we have people, how many ever there were, I don't know how many there were, but the people that voted for Biden, they have buyer's remorse bad.
You know what? Shut up. You know what? Hey, I'm sorry, but Ronny Jackson, I got a little song for you. All right. First of all, especially after today with the speech Joe Biden gave and the executive order he signed, have no buyer's remorse at all. And yet, you don't know how many there were? There were 81 million of us who voted for Joe Biden and voted against your orange moron. So put that in your pipe and smoke it, Dr. Jackson. And with that, we welcome David Daley back to the show. I can see the faces you were making before I brought you on. So thank you for that. I hope you appreciated my little musical salute to Dr. Jackson.
I did. I hope you saw me dancing.
I did. I appreciated that too. So, you know, I hate to say it, he did say the quiet part out loud there, but he's not wrong. And you wrote a piece that Dave Daley is with us. And as I mentioned earlier, you should know, he wrote the book Rat Fucked, which is obviously, I want to get the full title, Why Your Vote Doesn't Count, and followed that up with Unrigged, How Americans Are Battling Back to Save Democracy. David Daley is back. He's got a piece at The Guardian that I tweeted out, and I put it in the chat rooms earlier, and I'll post it on the blog after the show. Republicans can win the next elections through gerrymandering alone. And you heard Ronny Jackson say, there's only four seats separating the two sides in the House. This is not a good position to be in going into the first midterm election of a new Democratic administration, is it?
It's not, no. And sometimes when Republicans say the quiet part out loud, they are admitting what we should all be aware of. And if Democrats can't hold on to the House, who knows what happens, right? But redistricting alone could net the Republicans somewhere between 12 and 15 seats. And that is more than enough on its own to take care of the majority. Democrats won the U.S. House popular vote. And I know, there's no such thing as the U.S. House
popular
vote.
But there should be.
There's no such thing as any popular vote, right?
Right.
But, 4.7 million votes is what Democratic candidates for the House were favored by in 2020 over Republican candidates. And that only netted them a gain of, you know, a majority of 5 seats.
Wow.
And they could win the exact same 4.7 million vote majority in 2022 and yet lose the House because Republicans in between 2020 and 2022 will have redrawn the lines, changed the district maps in Florida, Texas, Georgia, North Carolina. And what seems clearer and clearer every day is that they also intend to crack Democratic cities in half in red states. So
right.
The single Democrat representing Nashville, Tennessee, they're going to divide Nashville in half. The single Democrat representing Louisville, Kentucky, they're going to crack that in half. The single Democrat representing a piece of Kansas, they will crack that in half. The single Democrat in St. Louis, Republicans have been honest about what they intend to do in New Hampshire. There's at least a dozen seats at the minimum that redistricting alone could swing. That's the majority right there.
Right. And this is what they've already done in progressive Democratic strongholds like Austin, Texas. I believe you said Austin is cut into like 5 pieces. There should be a Democrat representing Austin, but instead it's been chopped up. And the Republicans in the outlying rural areas make up the majority of the voters in each district. So they have their people in Asheville, North Carolina should be a really blue district, but they cut it up so that you had Mark Meadows. And now it's what Madison Caulfield represents that district, which is insane.
That's my favorite example in the country is what Republicans did to Asheville, North Carolina. If you want to understand the full impact of what gerrymandering does to our democracy and our elections and to our government, all you have to do is look at Asheville.
Yeah.
So Democrats lost. So when Republicans set out to use redistricting as a tool for a path back to power after 2010, they had this national strategy in the 2010 election to win back state legislatures nationwide in North Carolina, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, Wisconsin. And they executed it to a T. They won the 106 state legislative seats they needed in those 17 states to control the drawing of more than 200 state legislative districts around the country on their own with no Democratic input at all. And what they set out to do in North Carolina was to take this purple state and to draw a 10-3 map. So 10 Republicans and 3 Democrats representing this pretty closely divided 50-50 state. And in order to pull that off, what they had to do was take the city of Asheville, the largest city in Western North Carolina, a liberal hippie vegan diner oasis in the middle of the mountains that, you know, hid the that hid Eric Rudolph.
Right.
You know,
right.
So it's, you know, it's a weird place, but it's not a bunch of Republicans. The biggest city out there is Asheville.
Yep.
And that district had swung back and forth throughout the 2000s. It was a Republican district. It was a Democratic district. It was a pretty conservative Democrat, but it was, you know, it represented the district. And when Republicans took it over, they were really clear about what they were going to do. David Lewis, who chaired the redistricting commission in North Carolina, has since been indicted on campaign finance charges, was very clear. I'm going to draw a 10-3 map. And they did this by taking Asheville, drawing a line down the middle, cracking the city in half, and creating two conservative districts, one represented by Patrick McHenry,
right.
and the mm-hmm. other that was, as soon as the conservative Democrats saw the new lines, he retired, said, I'm out of here. And a small town sandwich shop owner named Mark Meadows announces his run for that office. Wow. He runs on a birtherism platform. You can go online and you can find the clip of him saying, if I'm elected, I'm going to send Barack Obama back to Kenya or wherever it is he comes from.
Yeah.
Hawaii. I mean, you'd be sending him back
right,
to
Hawaii
yes. Mark. And that with less than 40% of the vote in the first round there catapulted him into Congress, where he then takes down John Boehner by filing the parliamentary motion to vacate the chair, shuts down the government, and then becomes Donald Trump's chief of staff.
Right.
Redistricting changes our politics in every single way. It's these people that get elected from these extreme districts who are nuts.
Right. And more of these nuts are running in 2022. The crazy, the QAnon caucus, they're not calling themselves that, but that's exactly who they are. Are they?
The QAnon caucus already controls the Republican agenda in Congress. You saw this on January 6th,
right?
I mean, you saw that a majority of the House Republican caucus was willing to overturn a fully fair
election,
legitimate,
probably the cleanest election we've had in many, many, many years, because so many of us voted by mail because we were stuck at home thanks to COVID, right? But so that's why I call it opposite world. It's where up is down and in is out. If you take what's real and you flip it on its backside, and that's where the Republicans live today. You have a couple of quotes in this piece that's at The Guardian that I posted and will again. Stephen Stepanek, New Hampshire's Republican State Party chair, said, quote, "We control redistricting. I can stand here today and guarantee you that we will send a conservative Republican to Washington as a congressperson in 2022. Oh, hold on. That's my daughter. Hold on. Hold on a second. My daughter's name is Allison, and that's my ringtone. And my phone is connected to the Bluetooth on my board. This is how high tech I am. And she should know better than to call me right now because I'm on the air. It shouldn't
Her aim is true.
Her aim is true. Yeah, my Alice. That's how I know it's my kid calling. Anyway, sorry, Allison. I hope I don't get copyright violated for that. I didn't mean to play that. Anyway,
it's going
to
cost you a fortune.
No, they just boot me off of YouTube for 3 months at a time. All right. So I should have just taken her call, see what she's calling about. In Kansas, Susan Weigel, the Republican Party state Senate president, campaigned on a promise to draw a gerrymandered map that, quote, takes out the only Democrat in the state's congressional delegation. Quote, "We can do that. I guarantee you that we can draw four Republican congressional maps." They're not even trying to hide it. Because they can do it, and it's legal. How do we fix this?
They don't have to hide it.
No.
They don't have to hide it, right? I mean, they have the power, and they can do it if they want to.
Wow. So the recourse, you know, when I ask facetiously almost, how do we fix this? We miss that. We miss that by not voting in our state elections to get these state legislatures out of the hands of Republicans. You said it earlier, the Democrats for the last few cycles have won a majority of the votes, the popular vote, in House elections by overwhelming majorities, and yet we still lost control of the House. That's because this is not a democracy. It's not majority rule in this country anymore. That's what we need to fix.
We are heading, well, we're already living in a crisis of Republican minority rule, and the problem is that it's about to get a whole lot worse. I mean, in 2020, Democrats were able to barely hold on to the House mm-hmm. by the you know, distance of their fingernails, even though they won a huge 4.7 million vote landslide. Joe Biden won a 7.5 million vote landslide for the White House. He was able to win the Electoral College by 45,000 votes in three states.
Wow.
Democratic candidates for the U.S. Senate represent you know, 41.5 million more voters than the Republicans in the U.S.
Right.
You know, and as a result of all of that, Republicans have been able to appoint Republican presidents who lost the popular vote have been able to appoint five of the six conservative justices to the U.S. Supreme Court. Right. So,
well, think about this. I mean, in recent years, I think the only Republican president who won the popular vote was George W. Bush in 2004, if I have that right. Other than that, they all lost the popular vote. Even when
you have to go back to George H. W. Bush in 88.
Wow. It's nuts.
And here's the trick, right? Redistricting is going to happen over the course of the next 6 to 7 months. So the 2022 election is going to be held on these new maps that Republicans could win, even though they
lose
a huge majority. The 2022 Senate, you know, I mean, are Democrats going to win the Senate or not? I mean, I think it's a huge toss up.
Now, is the Senate as precarious as the House? Because the Senate is not district based. I mean, it's the entire state. So
the Senate is not district based, but these gerrymandered state legislatures in states that are going to have close races like Arizona, North Carolina, and Georgia and Wisconsin are working really hard to pass these voter suppression bills. So take a state like Georgia. What was the win margin for John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock? It was not very much.
Not very
much. The win margin for Joe Biden was about 12,000 votes. In Arizona, it was less than 10,000 votes. So these are close states. And when you enact the kind of suppression measures that these states have, you can absolutely see the impact of gerrymandering on statewide races. And then let's see what these state legislatures do about then trying to gerrymander the Electoral College. So take the state of Wisconsin, for example.
Okay.
There is a proposal in the state of Wisconsin right now that would allocate electoral votes in Wisconsin by winners of congressional districts.
Oh, God. Oh, so, God.
So Joe Biden won Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
But Donald Trump won six of the eight, and then a state gets the extra two for to represent the U.S. Senate seats. They want to allocate one vote for every electoral, for every congressional district, and then the extra two would go to the candidate that won the most congressional districts. So Biden wins the state, but under the rules they want to pass, Trump would have gotten eight of the 10 electors. Now imagine if you do that in Pennsylvania, if you do that in Michigan, if you do that in some of these other states, right? And then you begin to see the importance of the 2022 governor's races in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin, where there is a Democratic governor in place to veto whatever insanity that the Republican legislature wants to pass in advance of the 2024 presidential election that could throw that even deeper towards minority rule.
Lovely. David Daley, I was feeling really kind of good going into the weekend because of what Joe Biden did earlier today with his executive order on antitrust and monopolies, thinking, okay, he's doing something really good here where this is good. But this is downright depressing. You know,
You invited Eeyore on the show. I mean, I'm sorry.
There's the cloud over your head. I live in Florida. Florida has many more registered Democrats than Republicans. Yet for as long as I've been back here, I moved back here in 2004, I think, when Allison started kindergarten. And we've had Republicans running the state ever since. The last Democratic governor we had, I think, was Bob Graham. And that was before I came back here, right? So, and we have many more registered Democrats than Republicans, yet we can't get a Democrat in office in Tallahassee. And Nikki Fried, who somehow got in as agriculture commissioner, agriculture secretary, which is a big cabinet level position in Florida, she's running for governor. She didn't even raise $1 million in the last quarter. And so Charlie Crist is running. He's the former Republican governor of Florida who became a Democrat. Well, who became independent and then became a Democrat. And he's running. This is the best we can do in Florida?
The story of Florida in 2010 and how it got this way is, to me, one of the most, to me, it's a political thriller. And I tell the story in Ratfucked. So in 2010 in Florida, there are two statewide constitutional amendments passed that end partisan gerrymandering.
That's right. Fair districts, Florida. We voted for it.
Yes. At the state level and at the federal level. Mm-hmm. And it didn't take about 3 weeks for the top Republican masterminds in the state to get together. And they started plotting their way around this amendment because they weren't going to lose control over something as important as the political maps. And so what they did was they drew up their own maps. They hired consultants who spent months and months working on the most detailed, specific, gerrymandered maps of both the congressional districts in the state as well as the state legislature. And they funneled those maps into the public process, and they tried to keep their hands off of them. They created these consultant-driven maps, and then they put the names of their wives and their neighbors. They even created phony Gmail addresses under the names of their old college interns. Oh my God. And they smuggled these maps into the process under their names. And those maps were actually enacted into law without any changes. This was a conspiracy that hit just about every level of Florida politics. It was a sneaky behind-the-scenes subversion of the Constitution. They ran a secret shadow redistricting process. Wow. And you all have lived under it in Florida for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And like so many other states, the maps that were drawn in 2010 in Florida not only held for a decade, like they did in North Carolina, in Michigan, in Ohio, in Florida, in Georgia, in Pennsylvania. Democrats haven't taken back a state legislative chamber in either of those states in more than a decade. And now they're going to have the chance this coming fall and winter to redraw those maps for the next decade and lock themselves in power for another 10 years.
And we warned everybody. I mean, it's not like this has been a secret. For the last 10 years, we were screaming, you got to get out. You got to vote in those state elections. Yeah. It's so important because the 2020 census is going to come. And was so screwed up too. So those numbers are skewed even more, that giving them more ammunition to draw the districts in more reprehensible and heinous ways. People didn't heed the warnings. I think we just don't have the sense of urgency on the left. Part of it I can put in sort of positive terms. We're not lemmings. We don't all march to the talking points that they send out. They don't send me talking points. If they did, I'd throw them in the trash because, you know, I think for myself, on the right, you've heard all the compilations where all the different talking heads are reading the same talking points. So you hear the same message all day long. It's very disciplined and they have this long game. You know, it goes back to the clip I play all the time from what's his name from 1980. You know, the good government syndrome. We don't want people to vote. The more they vote, the worse we do. They have been
Richard Viguerie. Yes.
No, it wasn't Richard. It was Paul Weyrich. It's this one.
Paul Weyrich.
How many of our Christians have what I call the goo goo syndrome? Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
That's why they want to keep you from voting. That's why all the voter suppression laws, and especially if they can pick and choose who doesn't get to vote, you know, those pesky people of color, those people who are more likely to vote Democratic, will keep them from voting. And then, boy, we could just blow it up. That was 1980.
And it's only gotten worse, right?
That's right.
I mean, we see what is happening. And I mean, listen, when you talk about sort of the fierce urgency of now, I mean, if Democrats don't understand what they are up against right now, look, the U.S. Supreme Court just, after, you know, a decade after blowing up the Voting Rights Act in Section 5. They just took sharp aim and essentially eviscerated Section 2.
Yep.
You see what state legislatures around the country are doing in advance of 2024. You see that there is nobody on that side that is going to stop them. You see what media on that side is selling them. And to have, you know, you take a look at what redistricting is going to bring. You take a look at what the 2022 Senate map looks like. This is the moment to do something about it.
What we've do got, we do?
We've got complete control of Washington.
Ostensibly. You know? We do, but we don't. Because,
we do, but we don't.
Right?
Because we have
a filibuster.
We have Prime Minister Manchin.
That's right.
You know, who, you know, and Queen Sinema, who are not willing to budge off of this. And so this is the moment to do something. There is a terrific bill. There's the For the People Act, would ban partisan gerrymandering. It would require the implementation of independent commissions. It would put an end to mid-decade redraws of maps like they did in Texas, like Tom DeLay did in Texas in 2005. And like what I'm sure all these Republicans are itching to do in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and elsewhere, if they can knock out Democratic governors in 2022. Mm-hmm. This is the moment that it has to be passed, because if we don't, when are we going to do it? We cannot count on having the House or the Senate in January of 2023. So this has to be done now. And it's going, you know, it's the filibuster or democracy as we know it.
Right.
And somehow this has to get through to Manchin and Sinema. I don't know how to do that. I don't know, you know, I'm not Lyndon Johnson. I don't know what the right, you know, combination of carrot
and nor is Joe Biden.
Is. But neither is Joe Biden, right? And if it's an election reform carve out that needs to be put into the filibuster, if it's a military base that has to be told is going to leave,
yeah,
if he doesn't get on board, you know, I don't know what the carrot is, I don't know what the stick is, but I know that American democracy as we know it is on the line, and we have the power to do something about it now. And if we don't, shame on Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema.
Right. And I agree. And I think the blame lies with them. But we have one guy in charge right now, and that is Joe Biden. So, David Daley, we agree he is not LBJ. But if you listen to his speech earlier today, he wants to be Teddy and Franklin Roosevelt. Do something, Joe. You got to do something. We are at, what is it, DEFCON 5 or 1, whichever is the most urgent. We're there.
I saw War Games. I think it's DEFCON 1.
I think so.
We play a game? Yes. This is not a game,
it's
the thing.
Not a
you
game.
Know? I mean, this is the entire ball game. And if it's a game, we're getting dangerously close to checkmate.
Yeah.
Because the avenues for majority rule are closing and narrowing. And if we don't look, you know, I think a lot of people look at 2020 and say, well, the system held. It was narrow, but we were okay. And if we look at that, we are taking the wrong lesson from 2020.
Because those are the old districts. Those are with the old lines, right? And that's what they did in 2010. Now, you write about 2010, the party remade American politics with a plan called Red Map. That's what they did in 2010. That's what has happened to us over the last 10 years. What they're going to do now in 2021 for the next 10 should scare every single one of us.
We live in Red Map Nation right now, and it's not really a democracy. I mean, 59 million Americans after the 2018 election lived in states in which one or both chambers of the state legislature were controlled by the party that won fewer votes. And
right.
Let me tell you, all 59 million of them lived in states where Democratic candidates won more votes and Republican candidates had control. This is not a representative democracy. If you live in Wisconsin, North Carolina, in Ohio, you know, I mean, in many ways in Florida, Georgia, this is what is happening before our very eyes is the legal withering and stealing of a majority rule tradition. And those of us who are sounding the alarm about it would love it if the people with some power to do something about it would listen to those alarm bells and take them seriously while they still have the ability to do so.
Who are the people other than Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema?
Well, you know, I mean, I think Joe Biden needs to understand this. I mean, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in the last couple of days have said, we can just out-organize all of this suppression.
Oh, really?
And they've set up a $25 million fund to sort of organize and register voters and try to beat it that way. Let me tell you, you cannot do that. It's not going to work. It's not going to hold Congress. And it's not going to hold, you know, it's the wrong strategy. It's a slap in the face to the organizers and the activists, especially the Black organizers and activists yep. who organized and mobilized and won Georgia. But these laws are taking aim at the very ability to even register voters. So if you think that you can out-organize them with a bunch of, you know, big donor dark money, you are wrong.
Right.
This is a moment in which we have to step forth and save a democracy through old-fashioned litigation.
Right. See, here's the thing. We being the Democrats, I'll just put us, we are playing by the rules.
Right.
The other side is not. There are right. no rules. They lie, cheat, steal, claw, con their way in however they can. It's not a fair fight. And so when they lie about everything, I say this all the time, if you can't stipulate to the facts at the beginning of the debate, you can't have a debate. They won't stipulate to the facts. That's why I call it opposite world.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
Nothing makes sense. The minority rules, right? You can look at it in the Senate. It's insane that it, you know, the fact that it takes, you can have 59 votes, 59 to 41, and you still lose?
The Senate is insane. State legislatures around the country have been warped beyond belief. And then they are in turn passing laws that are and drawing maps that have warped the U.S. House beyond belief. Mm-hmm. And what they may take aim at in the next couple of years is the Electoral College. And in these close, close states like Georgia, Wisconsin, and Arizona, where 45,000 votes determine the presidency, even though there was a margin of 7 million for Joe Biden, we need to be terrified of where this is going. There were some officials in jobs we didn't even realize, unlike the Michigan Board of Canvassers and the Georgia Fulton County Election Board, who held really important jobs in kind of keeping this on track and certifying results along the way. They're passing laws that are knocking these people out of their positions and replacing them with partisan loyalist hacks.
That's right.
This is a five-alarm fire.
Yeah. And well, in Arizona,
we're not acting like it's a five-alarm fire. We're acting like it's hot vac summer, and it's not.
In Arizona,
I mean,
where they're doing the fraud it, they've trying to strip the Democratic Secretary of State of her powers and to deal with anything election related, which is her main job, and say, well, those powers will return to that position after the next election. They're not right. even trying to hide it anymore.
They're not trying to hide it. In every state, they're being as aggressive as they can. And then you've got Joe Manchin saying, well, I don't want to make any changes if it's not bipartisan. Let me tell you,
I'm not going to let
Georgia
them
and Texas right. and Florida. It's not bipartisan.
Right. And he says, I'm not going to be the one to destroy democracy. No, you're just going to be complicit and sit back and let them do it.
You're just going to be the one who does nothing while the other side burns it down to the ground. And let
exactly.
me tell you, we will remember that in history. We'll remember it.
Yeah. David Daley, thank you. We started out so positive with Joe Biden doing the right thing today. Antitrust enforcement, yeah. But if minority rules, we're fucked and not in
we
a good way.
We got to get real. We got to get real.
Got to get real. David Daley, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I wish the, you know, it was on a more upbeat note. Hopefully one of these days we can celebrate something.
I look forward to that. It's Friday afternoon. Let's celebrate with a little happy hour.
Without a doubt. I will in about 20 seconds because I'm done. Thank you so much. Find David on Twitter at DaveDaily3, and I'll link to the Guardian article. Thank you again. You take care. Bye-bye. All right. With that, we're done. It's a week. We're going to stick a fork in it. Go have fun. Be safe. Wear a mask. And I'll see you back here on Monday, okay? With Cory Doctorow, because we've got important good stuff to talk about. Yay. And now, the news.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
President Biden Friday signs an executive order to encourage greater consumer protections and promote competition in a long overdue effort to reduce the power of monopolies. The order reportedly impacts numerous industries, including agriculture, airlines, health, broadband, and banking. And it also includes a provision urging the FCC to reinstate net neutrality rules. Author and journalist Cory Doctorow will be my guest for the entire hour on Monday, talking about what this all could mean. Listen live here on Progressive Voices Monday at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. Meanwhile, President Biden on Thursday said that America's 20-year war in Afghanistan would finally end next month. He said, "We did not go to Afghanistan to nation build," and added that he was not declaring mission accomplished. Perhaps the most daunting task facing Democrats right now is combating Republican efforts to suppress the vote. President Biden and Vice President Harris on Thursday held meetings to reinforce the White House's commitment to protecting voting rights. Biden met with civil rights groups concerned about the efforts to suppress their vote cropping up in states around the country, most notably in Texas, where Republican lawmakers on Thursday convened a special session to unveil their full plan for new restrictions on voting access across the state. It includes bans on 24-hour and drive-through voting. It bars election officials from sending absentee ballots to voters who hadn't asked for them and adds new restrictions on those who choose to vote by mail. They did back down on two important provisions. These new bills leave out any limits on Sunday voting, so souls to the polls can continue. And it also does away with those regulations that would make it easier for elected officials to overturn elections, obviously two of the more controversial provisions in the initial version of the Texas Republican Party's election overhaul proposal. New research shows that COVID-19 vaccines saved nearly 280,000 lives in the U.S., but declining immunity and rising variants are complicating things. Pfizer now says it's seeing waning immunity from the vaccine and is already developing a booster and plans to ask federal regulators to authorize use of the booster within weeks. But the FDA and CDC say Americans don't need another shot just yet. The World Health Organization's Director General also has warned that places with low vaccination rates may be so overrun with variants that by the time vaccines reach them, the shots won't be as effective at preventing the spread. Variant outbreaks are getting so bad in Australia and South Korea that they're both tightening lockdowns and safety measures in some of their more populated areas. Authorities say that the armed group responsible for the assassination of Haiti's president were professional killers, consisting of more than two dozen people, including two Americans and retired members of the Colombian military. 17 suspects have already been arrested, and police reportedly killed three suspects in the aftermath of the attack.
Never mind.
Well, it worked for Emily Latella, but I don't think it'll work for Toyota. The Japanese car maker issued a press release saying Toyota Motor Corp will no longer donate to members of Congress who voted against certifying the 2020 election. Interesting timing, though. It followed an announcement earlier in the day that the Lincoln Project would be releasing a series of ads directed at companies that donated to the insurrectionist caucus, beginning with Toyota. And finally, 14-year-old Zayla Avant-Garde of New Orleans won the 2021 Scripps National Spelling Bee on Thursday.
And now, Zayla Avant-Garde, if you spell this next word correctly, we will declare you the 2021 Scripps National Spelling Bee champion. The word is Muria. It's a genus of tropical Asiatic and Australian trees having pinnate leaves and flowers with imbricated petals. Muria.
Muria. Does this word contain like the English name Murray, which could be the name of a comedian, or just the English name in general?
I don't see that here.
Bill Murray made the spelling bee.
Muria.
It tells you she's on the right track, though.
Wait, what is the language origin?
It's formed in Latin from a Swedish name.
Muria. M-U-R-R-A-Y-A.
That is correct.
Zayla is the first African-American child to ever win the Scripps National Spelling Bee. She's also a skilled basketball player who holds 3 Guinness World Records for dribbling. The event was canceled last year due to the pandemic. Congratulations to Zayla Avant-Garde. You go, girl. I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.